What's up? Another episode of Ripple Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Ricardo Vince, also known as Ricky France, and a great episode for you today. I am very honored to introduce somebody who needs no introduction, Ben Swan, an investigative journalist who's been around for a long time. I've been a fan of his for a long time. If you've been going down rabbit holes and searching for alternative perspectives like I have, there's no way you haven't run into his work at some point. Today, we talk about some current events. We talk about his new platform that fights back against censorship, which I feel like is super important and one of the most important topics of our time right now. And we talk about a bunch of stuff. And I'll put in the show description on our YouTube channel, which is RV Theory 6, or just look up the Ripple Effect Podcast. I'll put links to his new social media platform that he's working on. I'll put links to all his social media accounts. I will put links to all my social media accounts. If you want to connect with me on Instagram, RVTheory6, Parlay or Parlor, however you pronounce it, RVTheory6, our YouTube channel, RVTheory6, Twitter, RVTheory6, Facebook. I have a personal page. You can look up Ricky Verandas, or you can look up the Ripple Effect Podcast and find Ripple Effect Podcast Facebook page. If you want to connect with me directly, you can, and people have, and I've had a blast connecting with listeners. Just make sure you send me a little message and let me know that you're listening to the show, and I'll have no problem connecting with you. So please do. Also, our Patreon page. I do have a Patreon page if you want to support the show. If everybody gave a dollar, I could do this full time. Until then, it's a passion project. And as you know, I'm going to continue doing this regardless because I truly love what we're doing. And if you do support the show financially, I'll let you know in advance who I'm booking, when they'll be on, all that type of stuff, collaborations, a little behind the scenes information for supporting the show. But more importantly, share the show, post it everywhere, upload it anywhere you want. It's all open source. It's about spreading these conversations. Honestly, if I could do this full time, then there'll be many more conversations you could be spreading. Until then, share the show, tweet the show, upload it, all that stuff. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the last Union of the Unwanted. It was a great episode. I think the shows are really taking a life of their own. People are really enjoying them. And it's a great way of connecting with other people who are doing similar things. It's a great way of getting different perspectives together. And like I say in the intros of those shows, getting interesting people, hoping to spark interesting conversations. And I think for the most part, it's happening. And people are really enjoying the fact that you never know who's going to be on the show. You never know how long they're going to be on the show, who's going to pop up. It really is a blast. It's really was something that we kind of just brainstormed, and now it really is blowing up. But I think people really enjoy a episode, a show that really embraces all perspectives and opinions and people from all different backgrounds and whatnot. So with that said, definitely check out the next one. It will be live streamed the 17th, Monday. We're trying to do them every other Monday, so keep a lookout for that. And I'll share the links on my social media accounts, so make sure to follow me on those social media accounts to get those links once it's live. We've been live streaming them on all the OBDM platforms, on DLive and their Twitch account or YouTube channel. But the next one, I think I'm going to set up my Zoom account so I can also stream on my YouTube channel. That's it, guys. I will get right to this great conversation with Ben Swan, and I will see you guys on the next one. Peace. Thanks for very much for being with me. I really, really appreciate it. I've been a huge fan of yours for a long time. You, like Thank Abby you. Martin, some of the people who've really been doing some great journalism I remember watching like Breaking the Set. You've been doing the reality check stuff, and it's just some of the best journalism. And I love the fact that you're willing to look at all topics from a logical perspective, regardless if people from the mainstream are calling it fringe or you weren't really scared of being labeled a conspiracy theorist. I mean, mostly because you're smart enough to know that term was used just to discredit people, to not look into things and just assume those things were debunked and not actually do their own research. In the past, it seems like it's gotten you in a little bit of trouble, just, you know, being willing to kind of do those things. But I think that's why we all love you too, is because of the fact that you're willing to go down any rabbit hole and go wherever it takes you, regardless if initially it seems ridiculous or not. And
right.
I think one thing we've learned too is just the fact that a lot of things that the conspiracy community might have been looked at as crazy for even contemplating now seems to be things that people in the mainstream world are talking about and accepting.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who are listening, anybody who might be, I don't know, living in a bubble, who isn't familiar with you, how did you get into journalism? How did you get involved in all this? How did you end up doing your own, because I don't think you initially sought out this whole career of journalism, right?
Right, that's right. I've been in journalism now for over 20 years. So I actually started out as a news photographer for a local TV station in my hometown, which is El Paso, Texas. I started out doing that. And I was just doing it because I wanted to be a minister. And so I needed a job in the meantime. I had three brothers who were all news photographers. So one of them said, hey, we have an opening. So I went and did it for a while. I was pretty good at it. I will be honest, I was not as good as they were at it because, as I said, I had three brothers. They were all better shooters than I was and all better editors than I was. But, I enjoyed it. It was good. And then I got out for a little while, but I got married when I was 20 years old, just before I turned 21. I was 20 years old and I got married, had my first daughter, and needed a better job than working in ministry because ministry I'm very passionate about it, love it, but you can't make a living very well doing it. So got out of it and then went back into TV again as a news photographer, but needed to make more money. So managed to convince them to let me, become a sports anchor and reporter. I did that for a little while. And that's a long story, maybe for another time, of how that happened, because I never really got to do the sports thing. I was told that I could do it, wound up doing twice the work for half the pay as everybody else. And that's kind of been my story throughout my career. I've always been asked to do, twice as much for half as much. And I was always okay with that because I always sought opportunity, right? There's an opportunity here and to grow something. And then over the years, kind of moved up through the ranks, became a reporter, a bureau chief, a morning anchor, primetime anchor, all of that in El Paso. Moved on to Cincinnati, Ohio. I worked for the Fox station there and was a main anchor for them. And started covering the election in 2012 that came, of course, through Ohio, the swing state of all swing states. And it was Romney versus Obama that year. But in the primary of that year, there was a Republican candidate who I had heard of but didn't know anything about. His name was Ron Paul. And I was covering basically all the candidates when they came through. I interviewed the recently passed Herman Cain when he came through and had interviewed him, and interviewed Jeb Bush when he came to town, had interviewed Mitt Romney and all these different guys, and done different stories on each candidate, kind of a profile piece. And when it came to Ron Paul, one night I decided, okay, we're going to do this last candidate. No one knows anything about him. He's that crazy old man who stands at the end of the stage. He never gets to talk, and he only just talks about war, right? And so I didn't know anything about him. And I did a piece about him, and it was called What's So Wrong with Ron Paul? And what I did was I essentially looked at his positions, not whether he was nuts or, his belief in the Federal Reserve being, needing to be abolished, just looked at his policies. Policies, what would he do with the federal government? What would he do with foreign policy? And ran this piece. And then I remember the night before, I had 999 Facebook fans. And the only reason I remember it is because I had just interviewed Herman Cain that same week and about his 999 plan. And so we laughed about the fact that those two things were the same. That's the only reason I remember it. And then the next morning when I woke up, there were 6,000 people on my page. And I was like, what the heck is going on? And it was all these people with like these black things over their eyes. And I didn't know what that was about. And they were messaging me saying, oh, thank you so much for talking about Ron Paul. We can't believe you would talk about Ron Paul. Why can you not believe this? The guy's running for president. And they're like saying, no, people are writing to me saying media won't talk about him. They won't discuss him. And I was like, this can't be true. It's not true, right? It's just these people seem to think this. And they had these black things over their eyes because they were saying that he was being blacked out by the media. And so I started looking at it and the things they were saying and saying, oh my gosh, some of this is true, right? Like, for instance, I remember 2 days after my story had aired, Ron Paul, there was the Iowa caucus poll. He was coming in second in the Iowa caucus poll, headed towards the Iowa caucuses. And Fox News ran a slate showing all of the candidates and where they ranked. And they showed number one was Rick Santorum. And they showed number three, who I think was Newt Gingrich. And then they went down the list. But they didn't put number two. And it was Ron Paul. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is, I'm looking at that with my own eyes, right? I see that's happening. And then just started to cover it. And the more I covered, not about the man, about the person, but about what he believed, about things like this very controversial thing he said at the time called blowback, right? That that a lot of our foreign policy problems and what was happening with Al-Qaeda was the result of blowback, which I had never heard that term before and began to understand what that was about. And long story short, that for me, that was a huge awakening to the fact that what not just the media, but what I in the media, what I as a reporter was helping to kind of propagate to the public, which were kind of a slanted worldview based upon this belief that America is exceptional compared to every other place in the world, which I believe that America has the opportunity to be exceptional because of our Constitution, because of our constitutional republic, because of the freedoms that are guaranteed to people. That, but being an American does not make you exceptional as a human being over someone else simply by birthright. But we seem to have this kind of belief within media that that is true, right? And the reason I say that is because if you talk about, for instance, people being bombed in places like Syria, the media does, they don't ever say it, but they certainly cover those stories with a belief as if the people there don't matter like the people here would. You know, so just, and I don't want to get off on a tangent, but when we see what's being said right now about Black Lives Matter in this country, and I've been a huge proponent of changing policing for years, long before it was fashionable to be in that position. I've covered these stories for years about getting rid of no-knock warrants, about no hesitation targets, about militarization of police when other reporters wouldn't even talk about these things. Having said that, when the media talks about, you know, the lives of people here in the United States that are being ripped away, how come you don't extend that same concern to children and men and women in other countries whose lives are being ripped away, right? And we talk about war as if it means nothing, as if those lives are simply expendable because we attach the word terror to it. So for me, it was a huge awakening. Before I was introduced to these concepts, I would say I was a pretty firm neocon in my worldview. As a reporter, I grew up in a city that's, El Paso is the home of Fort Bliss, Texas, the largest U.S. military installation in terms of land in the country. I covered Fort Bliss for years. I would say that I was, you know, very pro-war. I was very pro-U.S. intervention. And it wasn't until I started seeing these things that Ron Paul was talking about and understanding them for myself and then looking at them as a reporter, two things happened to me. One was my own worldview changed. But as a reporter, my job is not to impose my worldview on people, but to say, hey, there is, because I had become educated on these things, I couldn't just report on stories the same way anymore, right? I couldn't just go and talk about, for instance, when Obama was running in 2012 and he had his presidential kill list, I couldn't just talk about that as if, well, because you're the president and you're stopping bad people, anything goes. Instead, I was the first and only reporter to ever confront him face to face and say, you have a kill list and it's unconstitutional. How do you justify having this thing that's taken the life of American citizens, right? So I don't mean to filibuster here, but that's essentially how I got onto that road. And then from there have had a, I would say, somewhat wildly successful in terms of a local news anchor and wildly difficult career since then of trying to exist in a world that really doesn't want you while presenting content to an audience that desperately needs you.
Yeah. It's so true. And Ron Paul is a good example because we talked about using the term conspiracy theorist to discredit people. A lot of people would discredit Ron Paul. And I'm like, well, what exactly are you saying is on the fringe or his views are over the top? And then you have a conversation with people. You realize, like, one, either they don't know anything about Ron Paul and they're just repeating what they hear on the media, or two, you know, they're just saying it because he's a Republican or he's a libertarian or whatever it may be, and they just don't like him. And that's the thing, like, because the thing about Ron Paul is that he's been pretty consistent with his views throughout his whole career. And you look at incredible speech after incredible speech of him being consistent, always anti-war, always anti-intervention. How many politicians can say that? I mean, if you've been in politics as long as Ron Paul, there's going to be a lot of skeletons in your closet. And with Ron Paul, there's none. I mean, regardless if you agree with him or disagree with him, I know a lot of people say, oh, I like Trump because I know what I'm getting, and he doesn't seem like the cookie-cutter version of all the other politicians. I'm like, I get that. But I'm like, guess what? We've had some people like that in the past, like Ron Paul. I'm like, you know what you're getting. He was consistent with his views every time. Like, even when he talked about, obviously him being religious or whatnot, he was anti-abortion. But he was also consistent with his libertarian views, where he's like, you know what? But that doesn't mean I'm going to push my beliefs on you via the government. Yes. It just means that I'm going to use my voice to maybe educate people and kind of give my opinion. So I think that type of stuff is so important.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think that, I have said this recently in regards to other issues, but I think it applies very well to Ron Paul, which is that truth ages very well, right? When you are consistent in your beliefs, based in truth, not based in some propaganda that you're pushing, but based in truth, what you find is a guy who in, 2003, when the Iraq War started, who literally voted against it and was one of, two U.S. members of Congress who voted against the Iraq War. He voted against it in 2003. It was entirely unpopular for him to do so. And then you go, 10 years and you see, hey, you know what? The public's come around to say he was right. And now almost 20 years later, it's not just the public's come around to show he's right, but history has proven him right. Beyond just what popular belief is, history proves never should have been there, that the reasons that we went there were based on lies. That's what he was saying before, that it was the result of blowback, not because Saddam Hussein was working with Al-Qaeda secretly. I mean, what I think we see is, for those of us who believe in truth, one of the things you can really hold on to is that if you are consistent and honest in the things that you're saying, what you find is you're going to get smeared today, you'll get smeared tomorrow, and for maybe the next few months or years, but over time, there's a story arc here, and the arc comes back to validating what you were saying if you're consistent in it. And I think in the world of politics and in media, it's easy to not be consistent because everything's based on headlines and the right now and polling. And so everyone's just trying to match where they think people want them to be rather than standing firm in truth. And I think that we're seeing now kind of a huge kind of wave that goes back to people saying, hey, some of these ideas about intervention, about wars in the Middle East, about what's happening with cases like the Epstein case, right, where we're seeing that there are very powerful people who are preying on young people and children around the world. It's not just a crazy conspiracy; it's actually happening, and so over time, it gets proven right.
Yeah, the crazy thing about the Epstein story, vaccines, Bill Gates—I mean, all these things that were considered completely crazy stuff that you're only going to hear about on the Alex Jones show or something that they would consider very fringe, is the fact that, and that's the thing, I have so many internal dilemmas right now in the world we live in, because it's like, in a way, I feel like people are accepting the fact that these things are real. Like, there's people, and I said this on last night's Swapcast or Union of the Unwanted, and I continue to say this because I think it's bothersome as a parent that I know so many people who let the pediatrician stab their kid with every recommended vaccine that they recommend to their kid, but now are saying, oh yeah, that COVID-19 vaccine, I'm not getting that. I'm like, wait.
Right.
So you're okay, and you just have all the, you trust your pediatrician to just stab your kid with, you don't even look at the inserts, you don't see any of the warnings, you don't see any possible side effects, you don't know anything about it. And now that it's your turn to get a vaccine, you're like, no, let's push the brakes here. Let's,
Well, I think that's true, but I think there's a positive in that, which is that up until this moment, right, there's been an assumption that's made. A doctor won't give you a vaccine unless it's safe. If a doctor is telling me it's okay, then it's okay, right? Because we don't know, because so many people have never even seen a vaccine insert. They don't know what it is. They just know you're supposed to do this, and everyone's telling them it's okay. And I think the overreach that's happened with the COVID situation is you have people like Bill Gates, you have companies like Moderna that have never brought a drug past FDA approval ever, and they're leading the way on this, creating a vaccine without even using the coronavirus. And people are stepping back and saying, wait a minute, you can't even figure out right now what the coronavirus is, according to you guys. You still don't know how to treat it, but you're telling us you're gonna poke everyone with a vaccine that you're gonna rush into production in record time. And so the positive of it is, you've overplayed your hand, right? If you're in the part of these vaccine makers, and what you've done is you've taken your very, very lucrative system where no one's allowed to question it, and you're blowing it up yourselves. It's not anti-vaxxers who are blowing it up. It's not, you know, alternative media blowing up. You're blowing it up yourselves because you've overplayed your hand, and now people are saying, well, wait a minute, I don't trust this, right? I trusted it before because I just assumed it to be true. But the more I'm seeing now, I'm seeing that my greatest fears are being realized.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And that's kind of the internal dilemma that I have, because in some cases I have conversations with people and they're much, even the most, people who are the most skeptical people, which that term alone, I have a couple issues with, because people usually use skeptical as debunking conspiracy theories. And I'm like, wait, I think conspiracy theorists should be called skeptical because they're the ones who are being skeptical about everything. Yes. So it's weird how that term's kind of, the meaning of it's kind of been used against a lot of people who really do question everything. But I talked to some people and absolutely they seem to be more aware of these issues than ever before. And I think the lockdown, like you said, I think that hurt the people who are pulling the strings or whatever, because people were noticing the censorship more. I mean, people were posting videos and it was being taken down. They're posting, I mean, your videos, checkers, and you did a great video on the fact checkers and who was behind that in regards to the Wuhan lab and whatnot. But I mean, I think people were noticing it. They had more time because, I live in the East Coast. I live in Massachusetts. I always say, like, people here are guilty of living very fast-paced lives where they don't ever take time to like self-reflect, reanalyze their lives. They're just so on the go that they never take time to realize that they're being tricked into something or media or whatever, you know, is telling them something and they didn't even research it. They're just going to assume that it's true, because a lot of times you come home tired, you put on TV for 5 minutes. That's the amount of information you're consuming in that day. You know, they don't have the time to do real research, which, you know, is an issue. But there are also people who are absolutely, it seems like everybody knows that a lot of this is politically motivated and everything is being used as a political tool. I mean, Fauci was just being asked recently about the protests of that increase, the virus spread. And he tiptoed around the question and didn't want to answer it. And I'm like, even the guy that everybody says, like, trust this guy, even though, again, that's another thing, like, how many people go to a doctor and get a second opinion? What does that mean? That not all doctors agree on stuff, right? It's quite common for people to go get a second opinion on something. So why in this case of, you know, which is more complex and it's a novel coronavirus, why do you think that only one doctor's opinion matters when so many other things that have been around forever and we're much more knowledgeable about, we get second opinions about all the time? It makes no sense.
Well, that's absolutely true. And beyond that, I mean, if you look at Fauci himself, he's a bureaucrat. He's not even really truly a doctor in that. I just read something the other day about his amount of time working in medicine, and I think it amounts to something like 2 years, and that he has actually spent something like 40-some years or 30-some years as a bureaucrat. That's what he's been doing. Listen, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying that you know, you shouldn't take him seriously. What I'm saying is that when there are frontline doctors, when there are ER doctors, when there are doctors who deal with patients every day who are saying, we have a different point of view based on what we are seeing when we actually deal with patients, right? That is what they're saying, and they are disregarded because the bureaucrats are saying something different. And that's pretty scary to me, beyond the fact that, let's face it, Fauci is also a creature of Big Pharma. The guy holds lots of patents. He has very incestuous relationships with pharmaceutical companies, including Moderna. The fact that he is able, along with other members of NIH, to profit off vaccines because they hold patents on them. I mean, that whole system is so unbelievably corrupt. To think that those people then don't have a conflict of interest, which clearly they do in whatever they're saying, and therefore they can't be questioned, when someone who has a conflict of interest cannot be questioned, that's insane. It makes no sense at all. And I think most people, reasonable people, agree with that and understand that.
Yeah. Do you being a parent, especially at a young age, do you think that's one of the reasons why you've been willing to dive deeper in the vaccine just topic in general? Because I feel like once I became a parent, that was a topic I was always kind of intrigued with, but I became super passionate about it once I had kids, because what was really bothersome about the topic was that as a parent, you know, you try to do what's best for your children. You love your children. You want to make the best decisions for them. But if one part of, or one side of the argument is being suppressed and you're not getting all the information, if you get all the information, you think, okay, the risk of my kid getting harmed by this vaccine, I think is worth or less than the risk of them getting harmed by this possible disease or whatnot, then I get it. But what's unfair is people aren't getting both sides of the argument. And that's, to me, what's so bothersome. When I see people like you getting, you know, getting suppressed, Del Bigtree, who just, you know, he's been on my show twice. His YouTube channel just completely removed, you know, from YouTube. Why? And he's talking to doctors, people who have PhDs, people who actually practice medicine. I'd love to know the people who are taking them off YouTube, if they've ever practiced medicine, if they have PhDs. You know, it's bothersome. So do you think that, is that one of the reasons why you're more passionate about this topic?
Well, no, I think for me, I certainly having kids has helped with that. But I will say this, that for me and my wife, you know, originally we didn't really have an issue with vaccination. We didn't know much about it. We just got our kids vaccinated. But as I mentioned, we were really young and really poor when we got married. And so I, from my position, was like, if we can like slow down getting these vaccines, that would really help because they're expensive when we were paying for them. And so, but my wife had actually been, and she reminded me of this the other day, but that she was, at the time, had been watching Jenny McCarthy. And I don't know if you remember, but Jenny McCarthy for a while talked a lot about staggering vaccines. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, she began to stagger them based on that. And, you know, she would be harassed by doctors when she would go in, you really need to do this. This needs to happen today. You know, don't stagger it. You're going to have to make another trip. And so they would try to do all these things, but she was pretty resolute in that. I didn't know much about vaccines even through that whole process until about 2013. I met with some folks when I went to Minnesota for an event and sat down with them. And Mark Blaxwell was one of them. And they just sat down with me and explained a lot about their organization. At the time, it was called the Canary Party. I'm not sure that exists anymore. But they, you know, were very, very passionate in explaining what was happening and showing me numbers. They actually were the ones who first introduced me to the fact, not the theory, the fact that you can't sue vaccine makers, that there is a vaccine injury court that's been set up, that vaccine injury compensation program that's paid $4 billion to families of children who have been injured by vaccines. And so when they began to kind of give me this overview of all this information, which I didn't know, again, as a journalist, my head was spinning, but it's like, okay, verify it. And when you start to verify it and you say, okay, well, now I can see these things are absolutely true, you have an obligation as a journalist to share that information. And so, you know, and I've done it on multiple platforms, independent platforms. I remember shortly after I came to Atlanta, I was working at CBS 46, and there was a protest here in Atlanta in front of the CDC, and probably, I don't know, 50, 60 people showed up. And so we sent a photographer out there, and I was like, great, they're sending one out. I do this segment called Reality Check. I'm going to do it on this. And, you know, the station didn't care because it was a thing that was happening. And so I covered it and then covered about, they were talking about Dr. Thompson and covered a lot of that, included all this information, which had never been on a TV channel before. And I remember that story did, I think, 4 or 5 million views in 24 hours. And so the station was like, that's great. But then started getting all the trolls who were calling, right? The general manager, can't believe you would put something so irresponsible on the air. It's that very organized, you know, effort. And I remember them calling me into the office and saying, listen, we're not going to have any complaints about it because everything you said is factual, but we don't want to be known as like the anti-vax station. So I don't want to do any more stories on this. And I'm like, well, hopefully there's not another event, because if there's another newsworthy event, you got to cover it, right? Well, yeah, if it's newsworthy, we'll cover it. Okay. And we kind of kept it at that. But it's been a struggle for years of finding these moments to share. And it's always so interesting to me because actual journalists in newsrooms, news directors and general managers who have had that journalism background, they're not the ones who fight. They're fine with it. And then all of a sudden, there'll be phone calls that start coming in from outside saying, don't let that on the air anymore. And then all of a sudden, then you hear from them, oh, we're not going to do that. Because now they're looking at it not from a journalistic perspective, they're looking at it from a business perspective.
Yeah, that's why the Epstein story was always so interesting to me, how people in the alternative media have been talking about the NXIVM and the Finders and Epstein. And, you know, I've interviewed Nick Bryan, who did the Franklin scandal. And it's like nobody in the mainstream would talk about it. And then all of a sudden, the media like got the green light to discuss it. What do you think that was? Like coming from somebody who's worked in the media.
So I think I know what it was. Essentially, the Epstein story was not covered for years. In fact, I covered it in 2014 and was blasted for having even talked about it on air because of the Clinton connections. And then it kind of went away. Then when there was a scandal that broke again about it when the Miami Herald began to cover it down in Miami, right? And then charges were brought against Epstein. He got arrested again. Now the media had to. Remember the Amy Robach interview or caught on tape from Project Veritas where she says literally, in that clip, she says, I had this stuff for years, right? I was sitting on this stuff for years and they wouldn't let me run it. I'm so mad. ABC wasn't allowing her to run it. They had this stuff. Virginia Giuffre has been out saying this stuff for over a decade, but media won't cover it. So what happened was, I think the media saw a glimmer of hope on how to spin the story. They knew it was coming. Epstein had been arrested again. There's gonna be trouble. But Trump had appointed Alexander Acosta as his labor secretary, the guy who had made the deal, a crooked deal, right? But now you could tie Trump to it. And so what they did was go back and look at some of the stories that were done at the time when this all broke, and they all start to link Trump to Epstein as much as possible. So I think what the media did was they knew that was coming, and now that he had been arrested, you couldn't really hold it back, but how do you now shape it? So media is very good at ignoring something, and then when the moment's right, shifting positions and now trying to control that narrative. So it was now became a Trump story, and it also became an Epstein alone story, right? It's all about Epstein. Let's talk about Epstein. What a weird guy he was. What a pervert he was. Wow, he was a rich guy who was really, really bad. And so what they did is they ignored all the people around him. Now, you and I both know, and your audience, I'm sure, knows, Epstein is not even the center of his own story, right? Epstein's the honeypot that is connecting all these powerful people. But the real center of the story is Ghislaine Maxwell, who's now, of course, been arrested. And now they talk about Ghislaine Maxwell. And even the terminology that's used, Ghislaine Maxwell, they'll say, slept with some of the girls. She didn't sleep with some of the girls. These are underage girls. She took part in their rape. She took part in their sexual assaults, right? She assaulted them and raped them. She didn't sleep with them. So even that terminology, and they used to do that, by the way, with Epstein. The first time around when they covered Epstein, the way that reporters would write about it is they would refer to the girls as underage prostitutes. There's no such thing as an underage prostitute. That's a minor who cannot consent. So by having sex with that underage prostitute, that a prostitute is someone who willingly engages in sex for money or some favor. A minor can't do that, but they use that terminology as a way of softening the story to make it sound like, yeah, these girls are young, but they're prostitutes. And so they don't frame it as the guy is a child rapist. They're not framing Ghislaine Maxwell right now as a child rapist. They're framing her as this woman who was corrupt and had kind of a kinky sexual appetite. And so what we see happening now is now they're kind of focused on Ghislaine Maxwell. And what everyone's trying to avoid is the bigger picture of all these very powerful people that Epstein was connected to. And so they're going to continue to ignore that. Even as recently as this week, I've been hearing media say things like, oh, Bill Clinton, you know, Bill Clinton was never even on the island. What? He is on the flight manifest 26 times. And I knew that as of 2014, I was reporting on that. 26 times he's on that flight manifest. So where did he go? They're circling? Where are they going? So I just think what media tries to do is when they know that the floodgate is going to break, they try to divert it to something else.
Yeah, and without Secret Service too, right, I believe.
In some cases, that's correct. So in some cases, he would actually slip his Secret Service detail to get away from them. And of course, I saw Dershowitz, who's also been accused in a lot of this, defending himself the other day. And he says, there's no evidence that Clinton was ever on that island. Absolutely not, he says. And that all of this is made up. And he says, and Secret Service backs it up, saying that they never saw him on the island. Well, Secret Service, number one, doesn't have to report it. And number two, there are plenty of instances where he slipped his Secret Service detail in order to go with Epstein. And that's been reported since at least 2014.
Well, if you want to really go into some Secret Service stuff, what about some of the police that worked as detail back in Arkansas? If you look at like that older documentary, The Clinton Chronicles, I remember I had Roger Stone on when he wrote the book on the Clintons. And I mean, some of the police officers that worked as details, I mean, the stuff they would say, I mean, he obviously, and that's the thing. I mean, it's, they just released some Epstein or some, you know, some documents or whatever, but it's like the names are all people we already assumed. It wasn't anything groundbreaking. But but you're right. And people will just use this, even the Epstein story, as a political tool. It's like, if you're on the left, you're just going to talk about his link to Trump. If you're on the right, you're just going to talk about his link to Clinton. And it's like, you know what? They're all involved. And Alan Dershowitz, I mean, that's what sucks about the Robert Kennedy debate. He finally gets a debate and he gets it with Alan Dershowitz. You know, I don't know if you saw that debate on Valuetainment. And I give Patrick a lot of credit because he's willing to have a lot of people on. Even somebody like him in London Real, I mean, they've been attacked by censorship. And that's something I want to get into because, I mean, that I think is one of the biggest issues of our time. It's censorship. I mean, there's somebody has decided what truth is and what their interpretation of the truth is the only truth you can see. You're not intelligent enough to look at all arguments and all sides of the arguments and all perspectives to kind of come up with your own conclusion. We've decided what truth is, and everybody else is going to be banned and censored for your own good. And yet we're talking about communist China and the Soviets and all that. Like, wait, we're turning into them and we don't even realize it, right?
Oh, absolutely. But we do realize it, right? Because at least with the Chinese communist government, they say this is what the party believes and you will not deviate from that. They don't claim it's necessarily truth. They don't claim that there is necessarily no other thoughts out there. In fact, the Chinese admit plenty that there's other thoughts out there. That's why they banned them, right? They're very transparent in what they're doing. They're wrong in what they're doing, but at least it's transparent. What's happening right now in the US is different than that. Number one, there is an attempt to say there is no other thought other than the one that we're presenting to you. And if there is, it's being presented by someone who is trying to hurt you. They're trying to harm you. And so we're trying to protect you from this. You know, just as a for example, I released a piece yesterday about these protests in Germany. And so you have over the weekend, over 1 million people, it looks like from the pictures and from some of the, I have heard anywhere from 1.7 million all the way up to 3 million people may have taken part in this march in Germany. According to the official reports coming out of media, they said it's 17,000. Go look at the pictures. That's not 17,000 people. That aside, how did they describe them? They say mostly conspiracy theorists and right wingers. And it's like, wait, so most of the people who are in this crowd of, and again, looks like well over 1 million people, are all conspiracy theorists? And what is the conspiracy that they believe in? Because if you listen to what they're saying, we believe that being forced to wear masks is making us slaves. We believe shutting down our economy is destroying the economy. And we believe that we're in a democracy and we want to go back to a democracy, meaning deriving consent from the governed. We don't have a society right now where government derives consent from the governed. They are dictating to the governed and they are crushing dissent among the governed. So that's where we are right now. And what frustrates me about this whole, you know, social media fact-checking thing is I would prefer if there was a government office of fact-checking. I'm not advocating for this, by the way. But I would prefer if there was a government office of fact-checking versus what Facebook does, which it says we have independent fact-checkers, and these people aren't independent at all. They're a bunch of George Soros-funded quasi-journalists who aren't even real journalists, right? If you look at who they've worked for, they're all freelancers. Or in some cases, like the group Lead Stories that keeps flagging my stuff, we looked into those guys. Apparently, it's former CNN staffers and DNC operatives who are running it. So the DNC operatives are getting money from Soros and money from Facebook to be independent fact checkers, and they're completely political and not independent at all, but they have been given veto power to declare by fiat something as being untrue and blocking everyone else from seeing it. And that's insane. While simultaneously, I have to point this out, Mark Zuckerberg says he will not fact check political ads. You're not going to fact check political ads because he says that politicians have a right to lie and people have the right to figure it out for themselves. Oh, wait. Okay. So make sure I understand this. The most powerful people in society, the people who are in elected office, who are running the country, they have a right to lie on Facebook, and the public, it's up to you to figure it out. But those of us who have no power in society other than our voice are being told, you can't lie, even though we're not even lying. But we're being told, you can't say something different than what we approve, or we'll remove you. But politicians, the powerful, you have the, and they explicitly say, the right to lie.
Yeah, that's crazy. It really is. And I mean, the same people who are saying that, or generalizing that everybody in Germany is a conspiracy theorist, these are the same people who were also telling you everybody who's getting a weapon in Syria was a moderate rebel, right? Like, what are you interviewing these people? You asking them if they're moderate? Like, they're going to tell you, no, I'm actually on the extreme side, and you might not want to give me a gun. You know, it's like, it's so, and people just fall for this. And, you know, I want to, you know, we had this, Union of the Unwanted swapcast yesterday, and we talked about how, you know, some people in the show seem like they were losing a little bit of hope, but I kept reminding people, I'm like, listen, there's people out there protesting. There's a lot of people who are angry. There's a lot of people I talk to that are upset. I mean, I think the censorship, I think the public shaming maybe is scaring people to kind of keep to themselves. I mean, similar to like when Trump won the election, like a lot of people didn't think that many people were going to vote for him. And then all of a sudden they came out of nowhere. It's like, wait, apparently a lot of people felt the same way I felt. And I think the same thing is happening now, where there's a lot more people who are upset about the mandatory face masks. I mean, that's for kids in schools. Trump said in a press conference yesterday that the average age of people dying from COVID-19, and I mean, when we go down that rabbit hole of like the fact that the tests are giving false positives, people are in line and never even getting the test, but yet getting positive results in the mail. The fact that the CDC themselves say that when you do test positive, even if it's not a false positive, they're not sure if it's the same coronavirus that specifically is causing COVID-19. So it's like there's all these question marks. But yet, even if you believe all that nonsense, the average age is 78. But yet, the people who it's affecting the most, the business owners, the younger people who are going to social events, the kids who are going to school, those are the people you're affecting, but yet the average age is 78. Like,
yeah.
But all this lockdown, all these regulations and all this stuff, I mean, those aren't the people you're affecting. I mean, those aren't people who are like, I mean, they should be retired, right? I mean, most of them. And most of those people aren't the ones going to concerts and getting together with their friends and throwing parties and whatnot. I mean, I have quite a few old people in my family and life. They like to stay home. They don't go out much, you know? So it's like you're affecting, I mean, young kids are more likely to get struck by lightning. I mean, it's insane that these regulations are happening and people are upset. I mean, CT Freedom Alliance, they're a group out of Connecticut. They sued the government or the Connecticut government in regards to getting rid of the exemption rule for religious exemption for vaccines. Now they're going to come back on the show because now they're suing them for the mandatory masks. And there's also a change.org petition in Massachusetts in the state I live in that was going around where tons of parents were signing it. It was going viral on Facebook, and all of a sudden it just was taken down. It disappeared. And it's just like, what is going on here? And people, I mean, that's the thing is like, if people truly believe that things are what the TV and the mainstream media is telling you, then why would they put such an effort in suppressing all these alternative perspectives?
Well, that's part of the overreach, right? Part of the overreach is that if you want people to believe you, you allow them to ask questions, and then you answer those questions and help to educate them, right? In a up and up system. But it's never an up and up system. And I think people's kind of their antenna goes off, right? When they ask a question and they're told, sit down, shut up, you can't ask questions. Wait a minute. I'm just asking you a question about, you know, the health of this thing or the sense of this thing. For instance, why does it make any sense at all to say you can open up a restaurant at half capacity, but then people can go into that restaurant and walk past each other, go into the restroom, and they're walking past tables? Why does it make any sense, right? Scientifically, why does it make sense to ask people to cover their face with a piece of cloth that is not any kind of medical regulation that shows how this would help in any way, right? Just by putting any piece of cloth in front of your face, that's going to stop the spread of a virus? But just by me reaching up and taking the piece of cloth and putting it on my face, and I've now touched my face with this hand, and now I'm touching things at the grocery store, if I had that virus, I'm spreading it. This is not stopping the spread, right? And so you ask that question, this doesn't make sense, and you're told, sit down, shut up, you can't ask questions. And the more you hear, sit down, shut up, you can't ask questions, the more you question. That is the nature of people, is that the more they're told, you cannot question the leader, you cannot question the process, you cannot question what's happening. And by the way, when it starts to affect your life in terms of your ability to pay your mortgage, your ability to run your business, you start to lose your business. We've hit this August 1st date now, and this is going to be significant because Congress can't get another bill passed. They're taking too long. You got unemployment benefits that are running out. PPE has come to an end. So business owners who have been paying employees with that PPE money are no longer going to be able to do that. Sorry, it's PPP money. I'm saying PPE. And then on top of that, you have that moratorium on foreclosures and rent has now come to an end, which means that now the banks are coming to those mortgage holders and landlords and saying, you owe us, you have to pay us. And so that means in turn, you're gonna see landlords having to go to people and say, either you gotta pay or I'm gonna kick you out, right? And so because Congress is not moving, you're now gonna have far more people feeling pain. The more pain they feel, I think the goal here is the more pain they feel, the more likely they'll be to make a change in November. But I think the more pain people feel, the more they're going to push back and say, done, not going to comply anymore, right? I can comply as long as I still have a check coming in and a steady stream of Netflix and DoorDash. As long as I have that, there's a certain segment of the population that's going to be fine. But as soon as they're told, oh, by the way, DoorDash can't come to this door anymore because you got to get out. Oh, and by the way, the job that you had, yeah, that's permanently closed. So there's no job for you when this is over. When you see taxi cab drivers in New York City saying, we're ruined, right? We can't survive because no one is in taxis anymore because business has dropped by 70%. Those people reach a point where they begin to say, not going to comply anymore. So you have one of two choices. You either crumble or you fight back. And I think what we're seeing now is a rising boiling point that people are starting to hit. And I think that we will start to see more people take to the streets. I think we could see here in the U.S. what they just have happen in Germany. I think it absolutely could happen. I hope it does.
Yeah, and what's also crazy is how many people who were going to AA meetings who couldn't go to that. Suicides went up in California. They surpassed COVID deaths. You look at, you know, in Massachusetts, they just applied a new travel ban. And if you don't quarantine for 14 days, so that means like, you know, if you have to work, I mean, you don't get paid, you know, for 14 days, you can get fined $500 a day. So it's not bad enough that people are financially already at, you know, uneasy and have some anxiety, but now you're gonna, I mean, $500 a day, that's crazy. And yeah, so it is nonsense. And I think people are getting upset. And even the idea of locking down again and taking any steps backwards, I think is really, you know, people are upset about it. And I think people will protest, but there's also a portion of the population, I'm hearing people say a lot of this, and this is a little scary, is people are saying, I just want Biden to win just to get this all over with. And I'm like, that's exactly what they want. They're creating absolutely just a chaotic world that, well, and they're convincing you that, hey, if you just vote this guy in, you know, it'll all go away. You'll get things back to normal. I mean, look at the, you know, you have to keep this COVID hysteria up because they don't even want you going to polls. They want to make sure that it's even easier to mess around with who wins the election and cause more issues or whatnot. So, I mean, the thing is, nobody looks at this logically. I mean, masks might as well be Joe Biden, you know, flyers, because like if you don't wear a mask, people assume it's because, you know, it's not because you're looking at the science or the lack of, it's because you're a Trump supporter. And if you do wear a mask, it's because you're a Biden supporter. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, can we just look at the evidence? Can we just, you know, and this happened during the last election too. I mean, if you said something anti-Hillary, right, it had nothing to do with the fact that you're actually sharing. It was because people just attacked you saying, oh, what, are you a Trump supporter? And if you said something that was anti-Trump, it was because you're a Hillary supporter. It's like, let's just look at the evidence. So, I mean, this whole, the people starting to get this idea that like, hey, maybe we should just vote a Democrat in just to kind of calm things down. I think that's kind of, you know, a scary thing to think about.
Well, it's it is a serious thing, because if people are saying that, you're essentially saying, I agree to the shakedown, right? And then I think it's important that, that folks understand too, that I don't believe that it's there's any one group doing this, right? That it's not like, you know, Democrats are creating the coronavirus to overturn the election or to change that, or just pharmaceutical companies or just Bill Gates. I think we have a collection of different powerful interests that are all seizing upon a similar situation for different opportunities, right? There's financial opportunities here. There's population control opportunities. There's learning how to better manipulate and control the society opportunities. There is an election opportunity. So there's lots of different opportunities. And as the famous saying goes, let's not let a crisis go to waste. And so I think everyone is, or there's a large group of different competing interests all trying to kind of fit their own. But in terms of the political interest, yes, absolutely. I think there's no question that we are seeing a certain group of politicians, specifically the Democrats who are in office and the Democratic Party, saying we can use this opportunity to make life so difficult and so uncomfortable that people will demand a change. But again, I think you have to watch out for overplaying your hand. If you push it too far, then you know people might say, we see what you're doing and we don't like it. I will say this, if I were advising President Trump, I'm certainly not, but if I were advising him, I would tell him, hey, you need to stick to your guns. The fact that he has started wearing a mask because of the polling, don't do that. Don't fall for the, I'm going to do whatever I'm told to do by political handlers. The guy has good instincts, and I think he was right to do it the way he was doing it, which was to keep pushing for the economy to restart, getting people back to work, getting schools open in the fall, and pushing for normalcy again. And instead of doing that, he's actually been influenced by basically the bullying involved here, started wearing a mask, and is now saying, you know, the vaccine's the only answer. The vaccine's the only answer. That's where he is. And I think that's a huge mistake. I think you need to stand your ground, and you need to stand up for people and start drawing attention, you know, and don't think that by going along, the media is going to be nice to you, because they're not going to be nice to you, right? You are public enemy number one as far as they're concerned, and they're going to continue to tear you down. So I think he's making a huge mistake by kind of playing along, because what he's not doing is creating a different view, which maybe the positive of that is it creates room for a third party candidate like a libertarian to come in and to take that space.
Yeah, I hear. I mean, even when he said things like, I wish gasoline the best, I'm like, what, huh? That's the thing about Trump. It's like, at times you're like, you know, maybe these Trump supporters are right. Maybe he is going against the grain. And other times I'm like, okay, never mind. You know, it goes out the window. And again, there's always, like, I think a lot of us in the alternative media have always pondered on the idea of like, okay, do people go in with like true intentions, and then once they get in there, they realize there's too many people there, there's too many people pulling the strings, there's too many outside influences that you really can't do anything, and you have to go, you know, with the flow of things, or are they all just really good actors and liars, you know? And that's the other thing, you know, it makes me wonder, like we talked about Ron Paul, like if Ron Paul went in office, would he slightly do things out of character, you know? It's curious, but we know that, you know, think tanks, you know, lobbyists, big pharma. I mean, big pharma now, I think when I was getting into alternative media, it was always the military industrial complex. That was like, yes, the scariest thing. And now I'm like, well, big pharma seems like the scariest thing, because one, they're spending more money in lobbying than anybody. And two, they're, you know, a lot of times when we're in wars, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's kind of true. Like, it doesn't affect our everyday lives, right? Like, we still go to bring our kids to school. We go to work. We do all our things. But when big pharma is pushing their agendas, it does affect our lives, because it affects the vaccines that our kids are getting. It affects you know, the pills and that they're pushing on us. So you know, it seems like almost a much bigger threat. You know, geopolitics, I think, has always been fascinating to me. I think it's super important, because I think many people in America, you talked about, you know, the, at least in communist China, they're not tricked. They know what they're living in. We're like this mild version of North Korea, where we don't realize that we're, you know, that it's like we've been raised on propaganda, and just about everything we've been told is a lie. And I think, you know, in some senses, like the coronavirus hysteria has helped with kind of being the red pill for some people. But we need to fight back against censorship, because if people can't get that information, how are they ever going to be woken up to the reality of things? And this brings us to your new platform, ISE.media, which I signed up for and whatnot. But can you let us know what it's about? Because it exists. It's real. You can sign up.
Yeah, absolutely. You can sign up for it. And the goal of what we're building, so we're doing an equity crowdfund to raise the money to really build out this platform. But the goal is to create a platform that essentially rivals both Facebook and YouTube. It's video centric. It's not going to be posts like what you're going to find on a Gab or a Voice, but it is video centric for content creators. And it creates channel systems so that content creators can go and they create their own channels there. They can place their own content there and they're not going to be censored. They're not going to be shut down because they have a different point of view. In fact, what we're also not trying to create is an echo chamber. We're trying to create actually a place with competing voices saying different things and a marketplace of ideas where debate is fostered and encouraged. Encourage people to debate and to discuss, because that makes us smarter as a people. It makes us more informed. There will be bad ideas that come through that. There will be people who are wrong. Guess what? People have the right to be wrong in this country. You have the right to say things that are incorrect. And hopefully within community, that stuff gets sorted out and truth rises. As I said at the very beginning, in the overall arc of time, I think truth prevails and it does well. So that's what we're really looking to create, is something that is a place that people can go to where they can know that they're going to be able to explore ideas. They're not being fed something and told you can't think anything else. I'm sure there'll be ideas shared by content creators that I don't agree with or that I think are a little kooky, but that's okay, because it's not my place. It's a place for people to go and to share on a free speech platform. So that's what we're building.
Now, can people already start, because I signed up for it, but I haven't explored it too much. Can I already start uploading videos to it, or is...
No.
Not yet.
No. And the reason you can't is because what we have to do is actually, so right now we're using an out-of-the-box solution and we're placing just a few videos. Once we're funded, what we will do is actually build out the structure that includes those channel systems that will allow content creators to then sign up as content creators. So right now how you've signed up is essentially to be just on the platform, notified when things are happening, and to access the platform. What we want to do is create a separate system that allows you to sign up as a content creator. Now, obviously, not everything goes, right? You're not going to be uploading child pornography there. We're not going to allow anything that's illegal. But if you want to go and you place your channel there, you'll sign up as a content creator. And then when you're approved, you'll come on and you'll begin to place your own content. We'll also create a 24/7 streaming channel so that your viewers who are watching your content might say, hey, Ricky had this amazing episode, but not enough people are seeing it. And they can actually start to upvote it and move it from your channel into the 24/7 stream that's running, so to give more exposure to what you're doing. And it's a great way for communities to get excited about the content they're seeing and to share that with the larger community.
Yeah, that's such an important point. Midnight Mike, who does the Union of the Wanted with me, he we've talked about this over and over again, how the need for an algorithm to expose people to new ideas and different content creators, because that's what made YouTube great initially.
Yes.
You know, back in the day, you could go on YouTube and you could go down some rabbit holes and then you'd be like, oh crap, who's this Ben Swan guy? He did a report on the same story or same topic. And then you go there and then you go somewhere else. And we don't have that anymore. Now it's all being censored. No. So that's a really important thing. It's like not just to be able to post stuff, but be able to find new stuff and be exposed to different perspectives. And I love your attitude. I mean, this idea of like, I don't have to agree with everything that's on my platform. I don't have to, you know, people should have the right to say it, because again, it's a slippery slope, right? I mean, where do you draw the line?
Absolutely.
If I say you can't do this, and I think there's some things that I think in general we can all agree on shouldn't be posted. But outside of that, you know, like don't post a video of somebody, you know, of murder or like you said,
right,
child porn or something like that. But outside of that, like when it comes down to opinion, because that's the thing that's really scary. Like that stuff, I think most people would agree on. You can censor to that. But when it comes down to opinions, when opinions are
right,
being or perspectives are being, you know, and then it's always like, well, you know, if you say this, it could lead to violence. Well, a lot of shit can lead to violence. I mean,
yeah,
somebody could listen to, you know, I think it was when Ozzy Osbourne, somebody committed suicide on after listening to one of his songs. And I think in court,
yes,
you remember this? Yeah. And they're like, well, if somebody will commit suicide after listening to a song, they probably already had issues, you know? So it's like, mm-hmm. it's, you know, you shouldn't censor it because one person did, you know, a dumb thing, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know we've been talking for just about an hour, but I'm really excited about this new platform. I'm with you. I think the censorship issue is huge. And, you know, we should all do our best. That's why all my stuff is open source. One of my, somebody I'm a huge fan of was James Corbett. Me and him have gotten pretty close throughout the years. And I've always been a fan of the way he does things. It's like open, like, to me, like, spread these conversations. When we do the Union of the Unwanted shows, I tell all the participants, I'm like, listen, these conversations, put them anywhere and everywhere. Upload it anywhere you want. Just spread them like wildfire. Or like yesterday, we're joking about demon sperm because of that doctor. We're like, spread like demon sperm. But you know, it's really important just to kind of spread these conversations, because so many times you have a discussion with somebody or you share a video or whatnot, and you don't think you're getting through to them, but you're planting that seed, and you're just sparking some curiosity. And it's like, if they run into, you know, a Ben Swan video, and then they run into somebody else who's maybe saying the same thing, and somebody, now it's all validating itself, and people are like, maybe I should look into this, you know? So I think we can do, I tell listeners all the time, even if all you're doing is sparking conversation and mm-hmm. just saying, hey, check out this Ben Swan video, you know, it's interesting or whatnot, you never know how much of an impact you're having on them. And then that person's going to have a similar discussion with the next person and the next person. You start a ripple effect, and we can all make a difference. And like I said last night, I'm like, the second you decide or you think that you can't make a difference, they've won and we've lost.
Yes.
You know, so I think it's super important to do everything we can, do videos, do podcasts, and having a platform is most important, you know, so what's the timeline? Is this something that you hope to have up and running in the near future?
Yeah, we're hoping to have the crowdfund finished within the next couple of months. It really depends on the public and how much people get behind it. But we're hopeful that we'll reach our goal here within the next 3 months or so. We can get there and then really start the build out of it. And again, we don't have a hard and fast timeline for it, but we know that the time in general for it is right now. So the faster we can get there, the more we can do to make this happen.
Have you been on Parlay? I think you are on Parlay, right?
The Parlor, yeah. Parlor. Actually, I signed up for Parlor. Just joined them recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. And that's the other thing, where censorship, when you said you overplay your cards, the censorship is the reason why a Parlor is doing well, right? Because it's like, it's so over the top that before, if it was like kind of mild censorship, you'd be like, oh yeah, they suck, but it's convenient, it's easy, I'll just stick with them. But now it's like people are really looking for alternatives. It's a perfect time for it.
They're creating the market opportunity.
Yeah. Same thing with the Rogan going to Spotify. I mean, I think that was much motivated by, you know, by YouTube and the censorship. He's talked about it. He's talked about how he was stunned by how they're censoring people who were talking about vitamin D of all things. Like,
yes,
you know, vitamin D and vitamin C. I mean, like, these are things we've known forever that are good for you. And now if you say it, then it's misinformation. Or I mean, the media gets caught lying all the time. I mean, you've done videos on it. Like, they get caught lying all the time. Why aren't they being flagged? Why? I'm getting worked up. I'm never going to let you go because I'm going to go on my own rant. but thank you, Ben. I really appreciate it. Keep up the great work. I will definitely keep a close eye on your new platform. And send me any links that you might want me to add to this episode. And hopefully we'll have you on a Union of the Unwanted in the near future.
Sounds good. Ricky, appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Ben. Take care.
Okay. Bye.